Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Practicing basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success, so you know something I can really do this.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everybody. This is your host, Jason Staples. Once again, this podcast brought to you by Luis Marquez, realtor in Jacksonville, Florida, and more than a realtor, a trained photographer and videographer who can help you make your home look really spiffy and put together an online marketing plan to showcase your home and get it sold quickly for the best possible price. If you're thinking about listing your house, give Luis a call at 850-443-5797 or email him or contact him through his Facebook page, all sorts of different ways to get in touch with him. Also, if you want to buy a house in the greater Jacksonville area, no better realtor to work hard on your behalf. Support a fellow Seminole on all of this. Support the show. Let him know you heard about him from the show, and you'll get perks. Also, want to let everybody know that I've set up a college pick'em pool against the spread for listeners of the Unconquered Podcast. There will be a prize for the winner to be announced later. A form of Florida State Florida State merchandise that is presently in the works. But I can't quite announce that just yet. But there will be a prize for the winner. So go ahead over to funofficepools.com, search for the Unconquered Podcast or Unconquered Podcast football pick'em pool under college football pick'em. Should be pretty easy to find. If you can't find it, go through the at Doc Staples Twitter page. I've tweeted about it. I've tweeted that link out. Or to the Unconquered Podcast Facebook page, where I also have a link up there to the pool. Definitely join into that pool and join us for some pick'em action. See how you do against the spread this year, and see if you can beat me and your fellow listeners of the Unconquered Podcast. The pool is set up. Want to go ahead and get your picks in before this weekend when Florida State faces Alabama. All right, without further ado, let's go ahead and get to the actual show here, where I am joined by a very special guest, former co-host of this show, and my former colleague at the now defunct, or effectively defunct, NoleDigest.com, and that's before he left for greener pastures.
Yeah, greener would be the ideal word there.
That was intentional. At the Tallahassee Democrat, doing some really good work over there the last year and a half or so. And good to have you back. Also, you've been just kicked off a podcast of your own covering Florida State sports that everybody should know about as well. So that is the Knoll Sports Podcast. Give that a follow if you're a follower of this one. Either way, great to have you back, Trey.
It's great to be here. It's been a long, long time.
Yeah, a little too long. And, well, I mean, given that it's not like, you know, anybody on the Florida State beat has any access to anything in practice or anything anymore, or will have any such access for the foreseeable future, or, you know, access to interview players or anything during the week, anything like that, you know, the normal rigmarole of covering a college sports team, that pretty much is all out of the question. So it looks like you got a little extra time on your hand to do this sort of time on your hands to do this sort of thing anyway, right?
I don't know. I have a 4-month-old. I'm going to tone that down a little bit. The wife might hear.
Yeah. Well, I'll strike that from the record, I suppose. But yeah, what is Jimbo thinking with this blocking? I mean, I understand it coming into the Alabama week. I mean, I said going back to the spring that, you know, sources would dry up. We'd hear very little over the course of the summer, the spring, summer, and camp leading up to the Alabama game. But now word is coming out that basically that may be the plan, maybe for that to be the new normal even after the Alabama game, which is a little irritating.
Yeah, it's fairly irritating. Last year, you know, this happened, but we really thought that it was because of Showtime and they wanted to give the access to Showtime and Showtime requested it. But, now I'm not so sure. You've got Jimbo and Florida State Sports Information Department completely closing practice. We get Jimbo Monday afternoons, and we get to talk to him Tuesday afternoons, then we get to talk to him for a little bit on Thursday. But, it is what it is. You know, you've got to take the good with the bad when covering a program like Florida State. And
there's a lot of good. I mean, it can be a pretty fun gig. But
this weekend I'm driving up to Atlanta to go cover Florida State and Alabama.
Greatest opener of all time.
Yeah, it doesn't really get much better than that. So, you know, you take what you can get here and there, but it is incredibly frustrating to work on, you know, something like this where your access has just been completely, you know, killed.
Yeah, and you know, I wonder, this is where, you know, again, everybody has their weaknesses and everybody, you know, in certain areas makes decisions that are potential head scratchers. But this is one where, you know, again, coaches tend to be pretty paranoid and for good reason in some cases, but local media, you know, the local beat writers who cover a program are usually pretty invested. I mean, it's a pretty incestuous kind of relationship between programs and
Game of Thrones on me.
Yeah, I am a little bit. It's a pretty incestuous relationship between, you know, programs and the beat reporters that cover them. Because, you know, those beat reporters generally want the programs that they cover to do well. I mean, that makes it more fun to cover, and it, you know, makes it, you know, it gives you more material to work with and all of that. And alienating those people tends not to be the sort of thing that would make a lot of sense to me. But in any case, it seems like that's where things are headed at the moment. We'll see if that changes anytime after the Alabama game. But yeah, well, what else are we going to say? So either way, that being said, let's go ahead and get to our bold predictions for 2017 podcast. This is something we did together a couple years before you departed for your greener pastures last year, and I had to do it solo.
Yeah, last year I just started at the Democrat and wasn't sure what I was and was not allowed to do.
Yeah, well, and also you had your hands full with all of the additional responsibilities of getting a plan done for what you needed to do for the year and all that. So.
Yeah.
So yeah, I knew that was going to be the case, but I wanted to get you on board for this one to take a look at what we expect. I know you did a bold predictions piece for the TDO already with a few things that some of them I didn't think were all that bold, although I guess some of the responses suggested that they were more bold than I thought. But let's get to it. What do we expect from this program this year? And in fairness, we should probably look at what we expected last year. I actually went back and looked through my notes and re-listened to some stuff from last year's podcast. And generally speaking, I think did pretty well. Swung and missed on a few things, but that's inevitable with this sort of thing. But overall, once Derwin went down, I mean, that changed the year entirely, but on lots of other things, felt pretty good about it. I mean, I had, I'd said, you know, Cook would go over 1,700 yards, that the team itself would go over 2,500 yards for the first time in quite a while. Both of those happened. I had DeAndre Francois just a little bit higher on the yardage, but right around in the same ball in the right neighborhood and a little higher on touchdowns and lower and higher on interceptions, but the ratio is about right. So felt pretty good about a lot of that, but, and also I had the defense with, over 45 sacks. I had them or over 40. I had them at 45 sacks and, they exceeded that by a good bit. So felt really good about a lot of those. And then, well, you know, I was wrong about Rudolph with 70 plus receptions. You know, some of those other things did basically get Murray and Tate right, but it took them a little longer to catch than maybe anybody expected. So take the good with the bad. But I guess now it's time. I don't know if you had any predictions from last year that you recall, good or bad, but what
yeah,
you got?
I, you know, I predicted that Florida State would run through 13-0 through the regular season. And, you know, after Derwin went down, I was like, well, that goes out the window.
Yeah.
And, you know, that Louisville game was just a perfect storm of everything. And then, you know, there you had the North Carolina game where Florida State just, you know.
They screwed the pooch on that one.
Yeah, they beat themselves. They, you know,
well, and you can't. And this is actually one other place where I felt pretty good after I listened to my episode last year, because the first thing I pointed to is this team could be really good, but they do face four legit, you know, quarterbacks in that first five games, including a Trubisky guy that I thought would be a first round draft pick that early. And, you know, and Lamar Jackson, who, you know, I thought with Derwin James, they'd have a good chance, but if he got hot, you know, that, you know, who knew? Well, unfortunately, that once Derwin James went down, both of those quarterbacks got hot, and that was that. So, so actually, you know, it's one of those things that a couple injuries and you know, the Naughty and Sweat injuries at that time also hurt. Goals. Oh yeah, well, decisions to kick field goals.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah. So.
So let's just not talk about last year.
Yeah, let's get to bigger and better things. Yeah, so first things first, what are some areas? So one of the things that I learned from the 2015 season and from the 2014, actually from the 2014 season more than any, that one good way to think about things year to year is to look at which positions, which spots are likely to be upgrades or improved, flat, or downgrades compared to the prior year. And that kind of gives a good baseline for what to expect. And then, of course, you have to account for possible injuries and depth and all that. But, you know, you can have a really good team coming back, but anticipate that, but once you look at, you know, how they compare to the prior year, do you say, well, actually, you know, there are some downgrades at, you know, these four key positions, so we should expect a little bit of a downgrade overall? Or are there some upgrades? Where do you see... And I know you've been hearing some very positive things out of camp just the way I have as well. Where do you see some of the upgrades on this team compared to last year?
Well, I definitely think that wide receiver will be an upgrade all across the board, all three starters. You know, Naquan is just everything you hear about Naquan in camp is that he's just been phenomenal. We don't ever get to talk to him because he just says whatever's on his mind. Doesn't matter what it is, he'll flat out tell you. Same with Lavonta Taylor.
Yeah, that doesn't work for a Jimbo Fisher player interview.
Yeah, so he just says whatever's on his mind and really doesn't care. So we don't ever get to talk to him, but no, you know, word out of camp is that he's been really, really good. Tate, you know, has been really good, and then Keith Gavin may be the best receiver on the team. He's been awesome in the open practice. He looked like the best wide receiver on the team. He was catching the ball. He was coming over the middle, and I think you'll have an upgrade there. I also think, you know, the offensive line will be upgraded. Everybody points to Rod Johnson losing Rod, but you return four starters. One of the starters tore his ACL while in his first year of playing. Before that, he was pretty dang good against the run. Not so great against the pass, but he's worked on that. You had a guy who had two torn labrums in his hips.
I still can't even imagine playing like that.
Yeah,
I've torn my hip up before, and it's a horrifying thought.
Yeah, you had Cole Minshew who missed I think the first half of the season. He was unavailable to play whether he wanted to or not, with concussion issues, because that's been the case with him. He's fully healthy. And then you have a guy, Rick Leonard, who was a defensive end 7 months before the before camp or before the season started. So, you know, you talk about Rod Johnson. He's the two-time defending, you know, Jacobs Blocking Detroit Trophy Award winner for the ACC.
Which I'm not sure he deserved.
No, he didn't deserve it either year.
I didn't think he deserved it either year, exactly.
So, you've got that, but at left tackle is the only position that you may or may not see a downgrade. You're going to see an upgrade in the four positions otherwise on the offensive line, which will help. And we've heard really good things about Derek Kelly. Josh Sweat was saying that, you know, the only guy that that could block him was Derek Kelly. He moves really good.
Is that
he
a good thing or a bad thing?
You know, I'd say that's a good thing because, as you know, I am very, very high on Mr. Sweat. One of my bold predictions was that he's going to lead the team in sacks, and I don't think that's because Burns is going to be bad.
Yeah, but I mean, the fact that he's the only one that can block him, is that a good thing or a bad thing? That said, we do know what the other guys looked like at the end of last year, basically, right? I mean, that's where, you know, there's some similarities to. I can't get away from this, you know, and it's been a discussion recently on social media. Lots of people, you know, bringing up the 2013 team and how much better the 2013 team was than this 2017 team. And I can't help but keep going back to, yeah, but you don't really remember all the concerns that were there in the preseason of 2013. And
that was my first time ever covering Florida State.
Yeah, and you know, you remember full well how many concerns that team had. And one of the big concerns was on the offensive line, where you had a bunch, you know, you had four guys that had previously started and, you know, all of that. But then you had that, you had Bobby Hart as a really, you know, what are you going to get out of him at tackle? You had questions about, you know, how good is Cam Irving really going to be at left tackle? I mean, he is a converted defensive end and he was so, you know, he's pretty good as a, he's pretty good, you know, pretty good prospect, but how is that going to work out? There's a lot of similarities, really.
I mean, yeah, you look at Greg Dent getting kicked off the team for, you know, something that he ended up being able to come back to Florida State and not play football, but he was kicked off the team for, you know, right before the season started, and everybody was wondering if, you know, the wide receiver unit would be good enough, you know, because there was absolutely no depth behind the three regular starters.
Well, in the three regular starters, even the three regular starters, you remember, everybody, you know, remembers Kelvin Benjamin as a dominant player in 2013, but going into 2013, Kelvin Benjamin was less proven. And, you know, let's just put it this way. But if you just knew what you knew going into the 2017 or 2013 preseasons, would you take Kelvin Benjamin or Auden Tate?
Man, I'm probably going to take Tate before 2013, strictly because that I know Tate works his tail off.
And because we saw a year last year where Tate actually was productive in the last six games. We didn't really see that from Benjamin in 2012. They tried to feed Benjamin the ball some in 2012, and he just wasn't very good in 2012. So, you know, it was one of those things where that was the only three they had, really. And even those guys, you know, Shaw was a senior but hadn't really, you know, been depended upon previously. Benjamin was a total question mark in most people's minds. Benjamin was, in a lot of respects, the Keith Gavin of that year. And then, of course, you had Rashad Greene, who you take over any of the guys this year in terms of production and what you could expect from him in terms of being steady. But, you know, then you go down and there's so many comparisons. You've got the converted defensive lineman at one of the tackles. You know, there was speculation that Brian Stork would not last at center because, you know, maybe the younger Austin Barron would beat him out because Stork had just not been real impressive his first year plus, you know, in that job. And there was some concern as to whether or not he was going to be strong enough to really manage the interior there. And then he blew up as a, you know, in that year. So, I mean, you start going like, wow, that starts sounding really, really familiar.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a whole lot of similarities between the two. I mean, you look at defensive end, and you lost, you know, I believe Tank Carradine was the year before.
Yeah, Carradine and Werner.
Yeah, and Bjorn. So you lost both of those, and then you were starting DeMarcus Walker as a freshman, and
Mario Edwards Jr. as a sophomore, yeah.
Who was everybody, you know, nobody really knew what to make of him at that point. He hadn't, you know, stepped up and done anything.
And you'd take Josh Sweat over him because of what Sweat's done in the past.
Oh, yeah. You take, I mean, you got Burns. DeMarcus Walker wasn't very good as a freshman. he wasn't.
Well, Dan Hicks started at the defensive end position that Burns is in right now for the first three games of 2013.
Hey, you're talking about, you know, Dan Hicks, who was part of one of the most important plays in Florida State history. Let's calm it down.
True. Yeah. But
and that the fake punt.
Yeah, the fake punt.
Quarter.
Yeah, the fake punt. But let's be real about, you know, would you take Brian Burns or Dan Hicks in that preseason?
Well,
you know, hindsight is a funny thing because we all know that 2013 team became a buzzsaw and became one of the best teams in college football history. But man, in preseason, you just never know. And that's one of the things I keep coming back to thinking about this team is, you know, start comparing back and forth apples and oranges on these things. And this team, there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic.
Absolutely. The only two areas that I would, you know, just that I would say are significantly superior going into the season that I believe
Jameis.
Are quarterback and linebacker.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those are the two position groups that I, and that's, it's crazy to say because Florida State, you know, we'll get in, I'm sure we'll get into this later with the whole Matthew Thomas saga, but you know, Florida State's going to start three seniors at linebacker this year.
Provided that, Matthew Thomas is out there, which he will be, that, but yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. I'm throwing my hands up and just be like, do what you want at this point, you know, because he was supposed to be back today and now he's not back. And, you know, I'm on Matthew Thomas watch outside in the Tallahassee Heat.
It's like looking for unicorns. And, you know, if you see one, you know, you're happy about it, but you just, you know, you got lucky.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, I wonder, you know, what really we can expect from some of these spots. So yeah, I mean, I think the linebacker position and the quarterback position, you would take the 2013 preseason over this group. Other positions, most of them are either toss-ups or they might go the 2017 direction. You can argue the secondary until the cows come home because both are so strong.
Yeah,
but
I would take this defensive tackle group over the 2013
yeah.
group.
Even
as
with Jernigan.
As good as Temmie was.
Yeah. Well, Jernigan had never started before 2013, though. That's the thing people forget.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Nadi has 2 years of starting experience.
Yeah, and DeMarcus Christmas has one.
Yeah. I mean, so anyway, let's get to we'll do some hypotheticals here. Okay, so last year, DeAndre Francois against winning teams, FBS winning teams, played 10 games and completed 55.2% of his passes on the year. And against, ranked teams. So he played 5 games against ranked teams, was only 47.2% completion percentage against those teams and 6 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. So here's the thing. I continue to think that number, particularly his ability to complete the easy throws that Fisher scripts up on neutral downs, so 1st and 10, 2nd and 6, that sort of thing. His ability to complete those easy throws and challenge defenses to keep them out of the box against what should be a better run blocking and running team overall for Florida State than, you know, say pass blocking. His ability to do that is really key to Florida State achieving its goals. Let's say, do you think, or let's put a number. Where do you think that percentage ends up this year? Ranked opponents, DeAndre Francois' completion percentage.
You know,
it was 47.2 last year.
Yeah, and I think that has a lot to do with the fact that he had gotten obliterated so much that he was, you know, his internal clock was wound to a second. He had a second, and then he had to get rid of it.
Well, he also had a shoulder injury that was a lot more serious than a lot of people recognized.
Yeah. I mean, you look at that Michigan game, he completed 9 of 27 passes, but most of the time he was, you know, it was because he had somebody in his face within 2 seconds. So I do, since I think the offensive line is going to be better, I'm going to go higher. I'm going to say he's close to, you know, I don't want to go too high, but I think like somewhere in between 58 and 60.
Yeah, you're
closer to 60.
Yeah, you're right in the line where I was thinking. I was thinking around 58-59%. And part of that is because, you know, if you look at the difference between FBS winning teams and ranked teams, it drops from 55.2 to 47.2. I think he's going to basically be a little better against the ranked teams this year with the with his ability to make quicker decisions, understand where to go with the ball, having a healthy shoulder, some of these other things that will, and having cleaned up some mechanical stuff that even still in the spring needed to be cleaned up. But apparently, you know, reports from camp have been very good. I think he improves on that that 55.2 number by a few percentage points, and that winds up being the standard. So let's say just under 60. I'm going to say similar, 58, 59 area seems about right. And if he does that, I think goes pretty well. Okay, so who is Florida State's leading rusher, and how many carries does that does said leading rusher get?
Ooh, that's
okay. So that's a tough one, I know, because Florida State has been a while since it was a situation like this where they didn't just have Dalvin Cook to hand it to. And last year, Dalvin Cook had 288 attempts. The prior year, he had 229. And then the prior year, 170. So, and the 170 seems to be about the norm for the leading back in carries through most of Fisher's tenure at Florida State, just for the record, between, say, 130 and 170, depending on...
You know, I'm going to go with Cam Akers. I'm going to go with my gut. You know, everybody, you know, is saying that Jaquez Patrick is good. He's running like a guy who's, you know, finally turned into the guy Florida State fans hoped he would be. But I'm still going to go with Cam Akers because I think he's special. He's going to average a much higher yards per carry than Patrick will. You know, Patrick will turn 3 yards into five, whereas Cam might turn, you know, that 3 yards into like 7 or 8. Not because, you know, he's running over guys, but because he's making guys miss. So I'm going to go with 150 carries and Cam Akers.
Okay. And so out of 150 carries, then what do you think his average for per yardage will be? Or average yards per carry?
Man, that's. I'm gonna go and say that he averages just right around 6.5.
Yeah, so you're gonna put him at 6.5 yards per carry. You're gonna say Florida State's leading rusher winds up being Cam Akers at 150 carries for about 975 yards. Then,
yeah,
which seems about right to me. I'm not sure they get a 1,000-yard rusher this year. Although, you know, this is the interesting thing about Fisher's philosophy on this. Fisher does, and you know, there's been some discussion about whether Fisher rotates backs or not. You know, and obviously with Cook the last couple of years, he hasn't. So Fisher's philosophy on this, and I have this from about as good a source as you can get when talking about Fisher's philosophy, is to have multiple backs and to make sure that multiple backs are getting carries. So to kind of rotate, but then to basically feed the hot hand where you see it. So if a guy is really seeing things and really hitting holes and really doing what you want, then you make sure that you feed that hot hand while still trying to give some other guys enough looks to keep him fresh. Now, keeping Dalvin fresh the last couple of years is a little bit less of a point of emphasis because, you know, he could basically, Fisher felt like with the offenses the last 2 years, Cook touching the ball was really their only chance to score in some games. Well, so
the thing that I was told is that they really liked what they had in Jaquez Patrick. When he was out there, he looked good, but you know, they played a lot of close games and they said that it was basically, if you had Dalvin Cook, you'd give him the ball too.
That's pretty. It's pretty similar to what I heard. Yeah. Basically, what I heard is from the offensive meeting room. Basically, the determination was: listen, Dalvin. If we give it to Dalvin, there's a chance he could score on any play, and there's nobody else on our offense that gives us that. So we're gonna give it to him.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's the case this year. So that does, I think, mean that you'll see.
Well, I do think that that's Akers at some point.
Yes, yes.
Maybe next year, but.
Well, but the thing is, he won't be the only guy on the offense capable of doing that because you'll still have Keith Gavin. This year, you still have Nooney Murray. You still have some guys who have that home run capability. When you get them the ball in even in easier situations, they may do something with it. So that changes the calculus just a little bit. So I think that leads to a little bit more by committee stuff as well. So I'm actually going to agree with you there. I think Akers is probably going to end up with around 140, 150 carries and probably be the leading rusher there. But I think Patrick is probably going to be in the 120 range as well. And I wouldn't be surprised if Amir Rasul, who I've heard some fantastic things about through camp, winds up in the 100 range as well, that all three of them wind up getting a lot of carries on the year.
I think you're also going to see DeAndre end up with about 100 carries too. So,
well, that's going to be interesting because I think they'll run him against Alabama. I don't think there's any question that they'll run him against Alabama. I think he'll probably have about 12 carries against Alabama, but I'm not sure how much they run him against anybody else unless they really need it.
You know,
he had 108 last year though.
Yeah, he had 108, but that also includes...
That includes sacks, which was like 30.
I believe 34. 34 I calculated sacks. That out not too long ago.
Yeah.
And without sack yardage, he had 495 yards rushing.
Yeah, so that's a pretty good clip. That's about 6 yards a carry on 6.4 yards a carry or so, doing the math in my head, on
yeah,
what, 70...
Something like that. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but that sounds pretty close to what it was.
Yeah, it's about roughly 80 carries, a little under 80 carries, so about a little under 6.5 yards a carry. That's pretty good. But I don't expect. I think they'll do a lot of what Clemson did last year with Deshaun Watson. And when I talked to Dabo this off season, one of the things he said was, you know, we didn't really have a backup last year that we trusted, so we had to be really careful with how we used Deshaun in games where we didn't really need it. So, you know, they ran him a bunch when they really needed him, as you saw against Florida State and Alabama and some of those situations, but much less in other games. And I think it'll be a similar approach for Florida State there. But if you go back and you watch 2007 Alabama, they ran the heck out of Xavier Lee against the Saban defense, just as that X factor to beat the way that Saban calls his defense. But yeah, so... All right, so who then do you peg as the leading receiver on the year?
I still think it's going to be Naquan. I think Naquan will leave it.
Okay, most catches or most yards or both?
Most yards. I think Naquan will end up with the most yards. I think Gavin will end up with the most catches. Because, you know, Naquan, every time he touches it, he's a threat to house it, whereas I think Gavin's going to be a lot more. When we got to see him in the open practice, I really liked what I saw from him, because he would go, when he was going up against Tavares or when he was going up against Derwin, he was able to take and he was able to out-physical them to the spot where the ball was and then grab it and bring it down, and even with those guys right on top of
him. Yeah, he can win one-on-one matchups with even against those types of guys. Again, he's Florida State's, the closest thing Florida State's going to have to a Mike Williams type, bendy, big wide receiver that can make those kinds of plays. But, not to say that Auden Tate isn't pretty good there either.
Yeah. You know who I originally thought of when I was watching that? And he's a little bit, Gavin's a little bit bigger, but Laquan Treadwell.
Yeah, there's some similarities. I think he's a little burstier than Treadwell, at least after the injury.
I agree, but just the way he catches the ball, the way he shields the ball when he's going through, I thought that there's a lot of similarities there.
Yeah, the guy that some of my sources at Florida State from day one have compared him to has been Dez Bryant, where, you know, again, that kind of big-bodied wide receiver, similar traits there with that kind of ability to accelerate and bend and do all those things. So here's the question. So let's project then. Okay, Francois last year had 20 touchdowns, and 20 touchdowns, 7 picks. Where do you peg that? Where do you put that for this year? I'm gonna say he winds up with 32 touchdowns and about 12 interceptions this year.
Yeah, I think both of those numbers go up. I think he's going to take more risks, but I also think he's going to be more successful. So I'm gonna say that he gets up into the 30s with his touchdown, but I also think he gets to around 11 or 12 interceptions.
Yeah, so we're on the same page. So over the let's say over under of 30, we're both taking the over. Over under of 10, we're both taking the over, but the ratio stays about the same. And I think generally speaking, quarterbacks tend to have a similar ratio year to year on that, even though other things may improve. So let's see. Last year, leading receiver was Travis Rudolph with 56 catches. You think Nooney's going to have the most yardage. Travis had 840 last year. Now, again, I had projected over 70 and 1,100 yards, so I was a little off there. Murray had 27 catches for 441 last year. Where are you projecting Murray's catch and yardage numbers? I'm going to give it an over under of 60 catches for Murray. Over under.
Under, slightly. Slightly, like 55.
Okay, so then over under of 900 yards on those 50 catches.
I'm going to take the over.
Okay, so you think he's going to average over 16 and a half or so yards per catch?
Yeah, I think
that's fair enough. He was at about 16.33 last year.
Big catches, like he's going to take a lot of, you know, 5-10 yard slants and turn them into 80 yard touchdowns.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So you're going to say he's around 1,000 yards on 55 catches. So roughly Travis Rudolph's reception numbers, but another 3 yards or so per catch on top of what Rudolph did. Where do you project let's say the number 2 and 3 wide receivers or pass catchers? They don't have to be receivers to wind up.
You know, I think Gavin ends up with more than 60. I'll take the over on him, but I'm going to say that he ends up with around 750.
Okay. So you're going to have him really that's a pretty short catches. I mean, Gavin's a vertical guy. So even if he's making tough catches, if he goes, let's say 65 catches and he's only got 750 yards, we're looking at like 12 yards a catch.
Somewhere around there. I think he's going to have a lot of the way we saw it in the open practice, which is obviously not a great indication, but he wasn't creating a lot of separation. He was just being really physical. And I think that he can create that separation because I've seen him do it. I got to cover him in high school for like 6 different games, including a state championship where he just out-jumped everybody. But I also think that what's going to bring his average down a lot is when Florida State gets on the goal line, they're going to throw fades.
Yeah, they'll throw some.
Throw it up to him.
They'll do that with Tate as well.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think it's going to bring his average down because he's going to have like a 2 yard touchdown.
Yeah, but that out of 65 catches, that's pretty minimal.
I also think he has like 10 touchdowns, yeah, 11.
And that's saying a lot for where Florida State's offenses will get. I don't disagree with you, however. So let's see. So I just decided for kicks and giggles to go back and look at the 2013 numbers. And again, this was with Jameis throwing. Rashad Greene had 76 catches for 1,128. Kelvin had 54 catches for 1,011, averaging 18 plus per catch. And then Kenny Shaw had 54 for 933, along with Nick O'Leary at 33 for 557. You know, I actually think that this year is going to mirror that fairly similarly in terms of the numbers at wide receiver. Although I don't think anybody's going to have quite as many catches as Rashad had. I think we'll see probably 3 guys over 50 catches if they stay healthy. And then I wouldn't be surprised if the fourth guy is Izzo, and I think he's going to exceed Nick O'Leary's 33 catches from 2013 as well. So that'll be an interesting thing. Do you think so? Over under of 3 guys going over 50 receptions on the year?
I'm going to go the under.
So you think Tate's going to wind up a little under?
I don't know that Tate gets there.
Okay. I'm going to go with the over. I'm going to go with three guys go over 50 catches. Over under on Izzo's catches, 30 catches.
I'm going to take the under as well.
Yeah, it's probably safer than my bet.
Yeah, I mean, he had 19 last year. The receivers are better.
Saunders will steal some too.
Yeah, Saunders is going to steal some too.
As will the backs who can all catch.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm going to go under there as well.
Yeah, you're probably safe. I'm gonna say that 30 is really attractive. I'm gonna go with just over. I'm gonna say it winds up with, you know, somewhere in right around the same range as O'Leary did there. Now, any others on offense you want to look at? Any that you have interest in?
You know, pancakes for Cole Minshew because he's going to get some.
Okay, over under of I don't even know if we would have access to that stat.
We wouldn't, but apparently, I mean, Rick Leonard said, you know, he talked about the offensive line today, and basically just, I guess, glowing wouldn't be the right word because I don't know if Rick Leonard can glow. I get raved. He raved about the play of Cole Minshew. Dude, he's finally healthy, and you know, I've been a huge Cole fan since he walked on campus. He's just a massive human being, and now he has the old, you know, big like 80s style neck roll. He had that on today, and I was like, yep,
that's new favorite player. That's what you want. Yeah, that's right up your alley.
Yep, love it. You know, dude, just big old neck roll, and apparently he's just running over people. It was funny. You know, everyone knows how strong Derek Nnadi is. And Rick Leonard said that Cole was able to push him around some because he's that strong. So just, you know, throwing that out there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So last year's offense, and we'll limit this to, FBS winning teams. Last year's offense averaged 31.4 points per game against FBS winning teams. 31.4. How about a Power Five? I guess we don't have Power Five winning, right? Okay, so yeah, FBS winning teams. 31.4 points. Now, the 2013 team against FBS winning teams averaged 47.8.
Well, it's not really fair. Because
it's not fair.
You also had that Maryland game where
they scored 63, and yes, they played a weaker schedule overall. Where, let's say, over-under of 35 per game against FBS winning, and keeping in mind Florida State's playing a really good slate of defenses this year, starting with Alabama.
I'm straight up going under.
Okay.
Because of the defensive lines that they have to play in the first month of the season.
Yeah.
They play Alabama, Miami, and NC State.
Yeah.
Those are three of the, 10, 15 best defensive lines in the country?
Yeah, and here's the thing. Let's go back to, so I'm looking through going back to 2008, 28.2, 28.6, 29.9, 21.5. Man, 2011 was a disaster.
Well, yeah. I mean, at the end of the year, you started four freshmen and had a, you know, zebra
offensive
Sanders.
Line. Yeah, exactly.
Starting at left tackle.
Yeah. 30.5 in 2012, 47.8 in 2013. And then back to 32. So you probably got a pretty safe bet there. So maybe I set that too high. I actually think they're going to be pushing 35 on that. But I'll probably take the under as well. I'll probably say around 33 or 34.
I'll take 31, 32.
Okay.
Somewhere around there.
Yeah, that seems fair enough. Let's go ahead and then actually we're running already a little bit over the projected time here. So we're going to go ahead and wrap this particular episode right here. And we'll go ahead and put our defensive predictions and our predictions for the season as a whole on the next episode. And we'll do all that in advance of the Alabama preview, which is going to drop on Thursday. So I don't want to put anything out before then. Alabama, the airwaves have ears still. So either way, before we go, I do want to give Trey, you go ahead and give the full information on your podcast here, on the new podcast that's just launched over at Knoll Sports. We'll do that, and then we'll go ahead and wrap.
It's the Knoll Sports podcast. Knoll Sports is one word, and it's on SoundCloud, it's on iTunes, and it's whenever podcast is posted, I put a link up on our website, so you can find it there as well. They usually drop on Fridays.
All right, now go ahead and give that one a listen. There's always good interviews. There's going to be outstanding material there, even though the beat has no access right now to Florida State's practices or anything like that on the record. You can rest assured that Wayne has some excellent sources to make sure that everybody knows what they should know about what's happening in and around Florida State athletics. Either way, this will do it for us here today on the Unconquered Podcast. On behalf of Wayne McGahee III from the Tallahassee Democrat, this is Jason Staples, your host. This has been the Unconquered Podcast, presented to you by Jacksonville realtor Luis Marquez on Seminole Sports Radio of eSporto Channel. Thanks for listening. I made this.